The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's 11 a.m. on a Wednesday morning here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, some old childhood memories of tabletop dice baseball games actually help us to break down an NBA situation. When you find an early season Garden of Eden, what do? You keep picking the fruit until sooner or later you do get tripped up by the apple. And the sad case of how the late night munchies have turned one college basketball team season inside out.
Baseball dice game, is that a Stratomatic reference?
Of course it's a Stratomatic reference.
Nice, nice. I haven't even thought about that game in about, 25 years at least. But Dave, let's not talk Stratomatic baseball. Let's talk First Take. What did you see last night that you want to share with our viewing audience?
Something that was just remarkable. And as much as you enjoy watching it, you have the conundrum the next day is, what do you do about it? Did you see Brandon Paul for Illinois against Ohio State last night? Probably the best game we're going to see a kid play in college basketball all season. Illinois was struggling badly heading into that game, took the team on his shoulders. 43 points. The rest of the team only got 36. Not too often when one player outscores everyone else. 8 out of 10 from three-point range. We're certainly not going to see anyone match that again this year. But look at the efficiency that he had. Those 43 points, he only took 15 field goal attempts and only 10 free throw attempts. To only have that many opportunities and get 43 points out of it, that's off the charts. And oh, by the way, he had 4 block shots, and he's a guard. As good a game as we're going to see anyone play. Now the problem the next day. We'll tie this into a postmortem next week. Adjusting power ratings. Illinois beats Ohio State. You want to elevate Illinois, right? Maybe you don't. Brandon Paul had a brilliant game. The rest of the team, they were just kind of what they were. So next week, we'll break down settings like this, talking about how when one player has a real extreme performance, you have to be careful the way you adjust the team afterwards. Teddy, on this beautiful Wednesday morning, outside of fighting the CES traffic to get here, what did you bring in?
What do I bring in? Something that I've been dying to talk about for weeks. We teased it back in December. We couldn't make an official announcement until this very day. That official announcement, of course, is the Covers.com Super Bowl party. Get your ass to Vegas. Come on. Where else are you going to spend Super Bowl? I guarantee you. I can't guarantee you'll have a great time. I expect you'll have a great time. And I'm telling you, if you're not at the game itself, there's no better place to be for the Super Bowl than right here in Sin City. And, of course, Covers.com is going to throw a monster bash. Last year, over 200 attendees. This year, we're looking to double that, triple that, quadruple that. So get your butt on a plane, in a car, however you want to get here. Ride a horse and donkey if you want. Just get to Vegas. Bottom line, Friday, February 3rd, at not some chump change sports book, not some second-tier off-strip property. How about Caesar's Palace? Todd Furman. Oh, one of the greatest tweeters in all of Las Vegas when it comes to sports and sports betting, right now is I don't know what his official title is. He runs the Caesars Sportsbook. He's going to be there. Dave and I are going to be there. There's going to be all the guys that you know from Covers.com, handicappers, sportsbook directors, personalities, the works, looking for some dancing girls perhaps. We're going to have booze. We're going to have snacks. We're going to have prizes. We're going to have giveaways. This is what you have to do to show up or to come to the party. RSVP, that's it. The email address is party@covers.com. I'm not even going to flash it up on the screen because it's so easy to remember. Party@covers.com. send them a quick email. Say, hey, I'm so-and-so, and I'm going to be there. Look forward to meeting you. And, yes, we'll talk about it more on the show as we get closer to the event. But the bottom line is Friday, February 3rd, cover Super Bowl party. Be there or be square. Nobody wants to be square. Okay, it's Market Watch time. And we promised on yesterday's show we were going to do a breakdown of the NFL divisional playoff round. We did it last week when we talked about the wild card round. And now we're going to take a look at the hard numbers long term when it comes to divisional playoffs. We're going to spend a lot of time over the next 3 days breaking down these divisional playoffs. And first, the market behavior themselves. Here are the hard numbers, all right? Favorites over the course of the last 26 years. Favorites in this round, 73, 67, and 3. Nothing much to work with. Home teams straight up, yeah, they've been winning, 101 and 43. Home teams against the spread, 75 and 66, nothing to write home for there. The shorter favorites have struggled a little bit, 34, 36, and 2 ATS. But the bigger favorites, favorites of a TD or more, 40, 30, and 1 against the spread. If you've been laying chalk in the divisional playoff rounds, you have been making money long term. Now, two things worth noting there. One, we talk about margins. 74 of these 144 games were decided by 11 points or more. Double-digit victories. Comfortable double-digit victories. 63 of those 144 games decided by more than two touchdowns. Two touchdowns or more. What we would call a blowout or a comfortable win. But over the last 5 years, we have seen a trend in the other direction. These are 26-year sample size numbers. We look at just the last 5 years. It's been the dogs that have had the edge in this round. 13-7 against the spread. 65% winners. Not going to make you rich. It's going to make you a profit had you been playing the dogs over the last 5 years, in contrast to the long-term trend. So what does that mean? It means we see a lot of blowouts in this round. And also, in recent years, the dogs have held some value.
These blowouts are something that we need to explain because there is a logic behind the pattern. A lot of times, if you have big favorites not covering a little bit too much, say, well, the odds makers aren't setting the line high enough. Now, that point spread record of the big favorites has nothing to do with how high they set the odds because a lot of times they're just simply shattered. Here's the issue you have to focus on. In the regular season, when you're down big in a game, you keep playing because you have to come back and play again the next week. You stay focused, you prepare, you've got a lot ahead of you. Problem playoff time, you get down big in the second half, you know your season's over. So you tend to slack off a little bit. That same mentality isn't there. There's no difference in losing a playoff game by 21 as opposed to 28 or 35. So what you do find through the years, not a lot of backdoor covers of those big numbers. Once teams are out of the game, they tend to be out of the game. That's why you see that little bit of logic where someone say, well, if the favorites are covering, they should move the line a little higher. No, they move the line about as far as they can. Sometimes the line itself just does not come into play.
And that's key in two different scenarios. One, it's key for your halftime wagers. You know, we don't talk a lot about second half bets and second half betting strategy, but in this instance, you see a team slapped around in the first half. Sometimes you say, oh, I'm going to take advantage of the added line value, take them in the second half. This may not be the week to do that. Teams that are ahead, and normally I would never recommend to someone, when a game is line 10 and they're up by 21 at the break and they're laying 3 in the second half, I never say, hey, lay 24 in a game you could have laid 10 with an hour and a half ago. Sometimes on divisional playoff weekend, that might be something you'd want to consider. The other thing that you want to remember with all of these blowouts in this particular round, as Dave said, effort not necessarily going to be there. We saw it last week from Atlanta. We saw it from Cincinnati. Teams that are down, they're likely to stay down. So even though what's freshest in your mind is seeing all of the road teams this week who looked so good last weekend, that's what you saw last, that's what you remember. Take it with a grain of salt sometimes. I'll be on a couple of dogs this weekend, but not all four of them, I'll tell you that much. Should be a lot of fun. Dave, got an email for us that we want to talk about?
Yeah, let's go to that. We've got a note. This came from William, and it addresses something that we had talked about a little bit yesterday on this show when we talked about the Kansas State-Baylor game and the fact that even though there were some elements to that that could lead to an under handicap, these were settings where we're not comfortable because in a close game, you can get a little bit of a scramble late. William says, do you handicap the fact that games that are on national TV seem to play to the over more often than the under due to the fact that team intensity is up for the national audience And two, the last 2 minutes of these TV games can result in 10 to 15 points on fouls. Maybe some coaches don't want to look like they gave up late in games and continue to foul even when the game is out of reach. This can push an under to an over very quickly. I'd really like to hear your thoughts on this. We did touch upon that a little bit. If we're looking for totals, we're hesitant on pick'em type games as unders because the door is always open for that late scramble element in the final 2 minutes. The reason why it seems to happen more often on television, though, TV draws better games. Most of these conference setups will take the better matchups for the better ratings. So you're going to see more competitive games, not that many high lines. But also, yeah, you do have a few coaches of the bad teams. When they get that rare television time, they don't want to go down without a fight. They will drag a game out a little bit longer.
But, Dave, you make a great point there, talking about the difference between games that are supposed to be very competitive, games lined at, say, 5 or 7 or less, games in that pick 'em range, games that could very easily have a large number of scramble points at the final minute or two of regulation, versus the games with the double-digit spreads, where one team is expected to control the pace, the tempo, the game itself. I personally am much more inclined to be betting unders in a game with a double-digit point spread in college basketball than I will with a game with a single-digit point spread in college hoops. So, interesting question, interesting discussion. Thanks for sending it in. And speaking of questions, I know that there are a lot of you out there who've been sending in emails. Great questions. We're going to get to as many as we can on air every day. Please keep them coming in. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And get involved in the community. Heck, you're coming to the party. Tell everyone about it. Covers.com/posting for active discussions and threads going right now.
In Philadelphia, there's a crack in the Liberty Bell. We think we may see a crack in the 76ers statistics as well. That's coming up in the postmortem. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical masks on. It's time for the postmortem. We're going to take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing but probably aren't.
It's going to be showdown time in the Atlantic Division tonight when the Philadelphia 76ers travel to Madison Square Garden to face the New York Knickerbockers. Doug Collin and his surprising team have opened 7-2, one of the major emerging stories of the young season, and they're doing it on both ends of the court. Philly right now ranked number one in offensive efficiency and number one in defensive efficiency, number 8 in rebounding. When we see a team making it happen across the board like that, it usually makes us believers, making a lot of other people believers. Look no further than NBA analyst John Hollinger on ESPN.com, who ranked Philadelphia number one as the best team in the league, ahead of Miami, ahead of Chicago, ahead of Atlanta, Denver, Portland, yada, yada, on and on down the line. Hollinger called them the number one team in all of basketball in his power ratings yesterday. But we aren't there yet with Philadelphia. And that's what this postmortem is for.
Okay, some of you of the right era could remember being a kid and playing these tabletop dice baseball games. Stratomatic being one of the big ones, APPA being one of the big ones, and these cards that mimicked all the players. That was a whole lot of fun. When you're a young kid in Western Pennsylvania living in a rural area, you got through the summer that way. But now here's the problem. You pick your team, you manage them, you want to think you're smart, you want to think you know baseball, and you do these 162 game seasons. And you always end up coming a couple of games short of where the team actually played out. You think, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do better? Well, what you're doing is you're managing the team the way that team would be managed. Give certain players days off, give them their rest. You do that all the way through. But you know what so many of us did when we were younger, and we find this out from talking to other people? We always made sure the other team had their best lineup out there. And that's where that little bit of an issue comes into play. That no, when you were going to play the Phillies, Mike Schmidt wasn't going to play every single game. But you didn't incorporate for that, so your managerial skills dropped a little bit. You didn't perform as well as you thought you could. Same problem we find with the 76ers. Yeah, those numbers look good. Real, real good. But they're not as good as that. Now you come into the operating room, you slice the 76ers open. Here's what you find, and this has contributed a lot to the numbers. Now, we like the Sixers, we like Collins, we like the chemistry, but they're not as good as those overall numbers Teddy just read off to you. Here's why. Last night they played Sacramento. Missing from Sacramento, Chuck Hayes, Marcus Thornton. Beginning of a pattern. 2 games back, they beat Indiana. Well, there was no Danny Granger. They beat Detroit. Rodney Stuckey, Ben Gordon, they didn't play. They beat New Orleans. Trevor Ariza, he didn't play. They beat Golden State, Monte Ellis, he didn't play. They lose at Utah, despite the fact that Al Jefferson, he didn't play. 6 of the last 7 games, Philadelphia's been up against a team without at least one starter. 2 of those 6 had multiple starters out, and you could make a case that except for New Orleans, all of them might have had their best player out. You wouldn't notice that if you just look at the team's names in those stat columns. Yeah, the Sixers have been good, but they've also been very, very fortunate so far. We can't give them that rubber stamp just yet in those stat columns. Now time to shift to the NFL, and we're going to do this in both postmortem segments tomorrow. It's coroner's inquest time. It means we're going to go back and dig up a game played earlier this year and go a little bit deeper into it. And the reason why we're going to do this the next 2 days, 3 of the 4 playoff games are non-divisional rematches. Sometimes there's a lot of food for thought that can come out of these first settings. When it's division against division, you already know your opponent. When it's non-division, it's a fresh game plan, both for you and for them. So a lot of times we like to see who has the matchup advantages, maybe who has the coaching advantages. First time around Denver, New England, not all that long ago, just a couple of Sundays, Patriots closed the 7-point favorite, total closed 47.5. Final score, New England, 41-23. But what a unique path to get to that final score. Maybe something we can learn here.
Oh, yeah. We can learn plenty from what happened in the first meetings. In all game, Denver wants to run the ball early. They want to control the clock. They want to play for field position. But no matchup is as important in this particular situation with Denver facing New England as keeping Tom Brady and the Patriots offense off the field. That's what Denver's entire game plan in the first meeting was designed to do. So what happened? The Bronco game plan worked like a charm in that contest. It was freaking fabulous. It really was. The first drive, 80 yards, 9 plays. 8 of those 9 plays were runs. Tim Tebow capped it off with a 9-yard touchdown, and even with a missed PAT, 6-0 Denver. New England only needed 5 plays to go 80 yards to counter. Tom Brady hitting Chad Ochocinco, 33 yards for a touchdown, 7-6 New England. Second Denver drive, 82 yards, only 4 plays, 3 of them are rushes. Lance Ball, 32-yard touchdown run for the Broncos. They're up 13-7. Then they got a stop of New England. The third Denver drive, 63 yards, 10 plays. They kicked a field goal on 4th-and-1 at the 8-yard line, 16-7 Bronco lead. Remember, this is a New England blowout. This is what happened early in that game. It couldn't have been any better for Denver. They lead 16-7. They had 16 running plays out of 23 total, executing their game plan to perfection. But that nearly perfect opening didn't really give them any control because they turned the ball over on their next 2 possessions. By halftime, that 16-7 lead was now a 27-16 deficit. That extended to 34-16 into the fourth quarter, and the Broncos never really got back into the game. The final counts. Denver ran the ball remarkably well. 31 rushes for 252 yards. Team that's run for 252, they tend to win games. They tend to cover spreads. Denver didn't. Tebow's passing efficiency was good. 11 of 22, 194 yards, 0 INTs. So he's averaging in that 8.5, 9 yards per dropback. Good numbers. 4 different Broncos had runs of 25 yards or more. 3 different Broncos caught passes of 22 yards or more. But Denver had a -3 turnover differential in that ballgame. And against a very good team, that's going to get you in trouble. The 3 turnovers turned into 17 Patriots points. The other problem that Denver had in that ballgame, Well, they didn't have a pass rush. Tom Brady negated that pass rush, working to the tight ends. He finished 23 of 34, 320 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski combined 13 catches, 182 yards, one touchdown. Von Miller, someone who we talked about on the show a fair bit as being an impact rookie defender, one tackle, no assists, no sacks. So what's our task at hand from here? Well, we have to evaluate the impact that those turnovers had. Did the Patriots' defense ever really make adjustments? Can they make adjustments here against Denver? And can the Broncos generate more pressure on Tom Brady in the second meeting? We're going to be looking for the answers to those questions in Money Time tomorrow.
When we come back, just because you can run a good pick and roll on the court doesn't mean you should try to run one around a cop in your yard. Top of Insider Six Pack will tell you just what that means. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's pop the top on today's Insider Six Pack. We're going to start with some Ole Miss mishaps. And we're going to start at the college hardwoods for this evening. And troubled times for Andy Kennedy and the Ole Miss Rebels. They at least have a chance to get something a little bit better tonight. Murphy Holloway, who's number three in the SEC in rebounding, 9.6 per game. He's missed the last three games with a sprained ankle. Holloway should be able to play against the surprising Arkansas Razorbacks this evening. Holloway dressed and warmed up on Saturday at LSU, but he did not get in the lineup, and boy, the Rebels did not respond well in Baton Rouge. They lost that game 81-55, the first game after leading scorer Dendricious Nelson and reserve Jamal Jones were kicked off the team on Thursday, less than 48 hours after Nelson had been arrested and charged with possession of drug paraphernalia. And folks, we can't make this stuff up. This is just a classic story. 1:24 a.m. last Wednesday, a police officer responded to what he thought was the smell of marijuana coming from Nelson's residence. No one responded to the police officer's knock. As the officer was leaving, he came across a Domino's delivery guy and asked where he was going. He said that he was going to Nelson's apartment. The officer hid in the bushes to the side, saw Nelson come out of the back of the house to get the pizza, and then try to get back inside. The officer then confronted him, and a search of the apartment found enough evidence for the charges to be levied. The moral of the story? Any substance that makes you want Domino's pizza at 1 o'clock in the morning cannot possibly be good for you or your basketball.
Dayton's been off to a great start in Atlantic 10 play. Outright upsets over St. Louis and Temple, two of the best teams in the conference. Now it gets a little more difficult. Chris Johnson, excellent wing player for them, not going to make the trip to the St. Bonaventure tonight. Suffered a concussion in practice on Monday, out indefinitely at this point. Now, note how this compounds for Dayton. We talked on a six-pack item last week about Josh Benson already being out for the season. Luke Fabricius suffered a broken nose in the Temple game. He's going to have to play with a mask. Now, Archie Miller in his first season with Dayton, only taking eight players to Olean tonight to face St. Bonaventure. Very short, limited rotation. Maybe the only upside for them. You only have eight players. You do save a little on your budget for hotel rooms.
Duquesne had to open Atlantic 10 play without B.J. Monteiro, who's number two on the team in scoring, 15.2 points per game, and who leads the team in rebounding, 5.7 boards per game. Although he's with the team on their trip to Cincinnati tonight to play Xavier, head coach Ron Everhart didn't sound optimistic about Monteiro's chances of suiting up this evening. Quote, "We are hoping to have him Wednesday, but I don't know how realistic that is medically. We are really hoping by Saturday we'll have him in some capacity." Monteiro received cuts to his left hand and chin when he was hit by a bottle at a New Year's Eve party, but the school's investigation found him to be an innocent bystander, just in the wrong place at the wrong time. No discipline for him after that, getting smacked in the he got a discipline. He got smacked in the face with a bottle. That's pretty good discipline. His absence on the boards could be an absolutely crucial factor tonight. The Dukes have lost the boards in each of their first two conference games without him and now face the Atlantic 10's most physical front line.
Doc Sadler couldn't have asked for a tougher draw for his Nebraska team in opening Big Ten play than not only playing the cream of the conference, but playing them shorthanded. Maybe gets a little bit better tonight. Nebraska opens up 0-4, but Jorge Bryan-Diaz, second-leading scorer, second-leading rebounder, hasn't played yet in a conference game, finally returned to practice this week. Not a great player from a talent standpoint, but he's 6'11", 244, takes up a lot of space, gives you a low post threat on offense, but also a defensive and rebounding presence. And look at those first four Big Ten games for those two elements. They allow over 50% shooting over four games, get beat by minus 8.7 rebounds per game. So the upside, we may finally see Diaz back on the court tonight. The downside, it's been a sluggish week of practice for the rest of the team. Flu bug running through the campus on Monday, almost a little more of just a walk around on the court and a little bit of shooting, didn't even have a full practice.
Let's start cleaning up some of the issues for tonight's NBA action. There's no one playing better than Atlanta. I mean, over the course of the last couple of weeks, the Hawks have been monsters, straight up and against the spread, against a very, very tough slate. And although they're going to be without Marvin Williams again tonight, note that it's been interesting to watch how well Vladimir Rakhmonovich, the former Laker, won a title in L.A., has been filling in at that position. Rakhmonovich adds a three-point shooting dimension that Marvin Williams simply doesn't have, and frankly, that the Atlanta Hawks desperately need. He scored 42 points, grabbed 15 rebounds over the last three games, filling in for Williams. For Indiana, expect Danny Granger back in the lineup tonight after he missed Monday's loss at Philadelphia with a bout of food poisoning. That's never fun. Also look for Tyler Hansbrough to be in the rotation after he had to leave his last game in the fourth quarter when he was hit in his right eye. Hansbrough has been fitted for goggles. He's going to be wearing those weird NBA goggles on the floor for at least the next couple of games.
In our postmortem, we talked about the advantage that Philadelphia had against Sacramento last night. No Chuck Hayes inside for the Kings. No Marcus Thornton on the perimeter. Looks like it's going to be the case again tonight. Thornton being bothered by a quad injury. Since the Kings have tomorrow off, they figure to give him a day to get rested. You got to feel for Keith Smart, who's trying to put the pieces together with a group that just simply doesn't fit. With all these injuries, DeMarcus Cousins, who'd be naturally a number four, having to play the center spot. J.J. Hickson, really a reserve, having to start a power forward. Last night, Jimmer Fredette gets his first NBA start in Thornton's place. Not only a big gap between those two on defense, but Fredette only goes 2-for-7, has as many turnovers as assists. Sacramento is a mess right now. If you're Keith Smart, as much as you want to be a head coach in the NBA, boy, there's not a whole lot you can do with this group right now to make yourself look good.
When we come back, it's time to head to the hardwoods. As Money Time begins.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, let's raise the roof. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's go to Boston, where tonight the Celtics, 5.5-point home favorites against the Dallas Mavericks. And it's a different Dallas team right now without Jason Kidd manning the point. We saw Delonte West, former Celtic, guy who won a championship in Boston, man the point for Dallas. How about this? 10 assists versus only 2 turnovers in their win at Detroit, but it's a much different challenge here when you consider the Pistons' defense versus what the Celtics bring to the table. And it's also worth noting that with West playing the one, that forces Vince Carter off the bench as the starting two. That means that last night, the second guy off the bench for Dallas, Brian Cardinal, their bench has some holes without Jason Kidd in the lineup.
Question tonight, and why we'll be watching very closely, is what are we going to see out of the Celtics? Very unusual setting for them in this shortened NBA season. They haven't played since Friday. That's a rare chance to get out on the practice court. But from their confidence level, they think that they really need it. We're going to give you quotes from Doc Rivers and a couple of the players right now talking about how this is a different Celtic team than we're accustomed to seeing. First, starting with Rivers, we're just not there yet as a team. I think we've got a tough group of guys. We just haven't all bought in yet. It'll come. I'm not that concerned by it. I just know we need it. We've got to be a hit-first team, and we'll get there. Because that's what the Celtics have been the last couple of years. But you had Kendrick Perkins. You had Glenn Big Baby Davis. You had some hit-first guys. Let's talk about the players now and see how they feel about the absence of those guys. First from Rajon Rondo, referring to the Rivers comments. He's right, especially in the Indiana game. It was an ugly game both ways, but they beat us. They pushed us out of our offense. They just did what we usually do to teams in the past, and we haven't done it in a while. Now, I'll follow up from Paul Pierce. We don't have a big body like Perkins or a guy like Big Baby, but it doesn't have to come in a size package. It has to be, quote, how bad do you want it? I mean, the most physical guys in boxing aren't the biggest guys. Okay, so Boston should be fresh tonight. They should be focused. But if they're not physical tonight, could it be that we're not going to see Boston play that physical again? Again, what the guys on the perimeter were able to do was because they had the enforcers up front. Right now, they don't have those enforcers.
It is worth noting, however, that Dallas playing their first road back-to-backs of the season, while the Celtics fresh off since Friday, coming off those intense series of practices, Dallas on the court last night in Detroit was a comfortable win for the Mavs. But still, the only time we've seen them with a back-to-back situation previously this year, with the second game on the road, they went to San Antonio and got annihilated 93-71, a complete no-show for Dallas in that contest.
Let's go to the Staples Center for a big showdown tonight. Miami taking on the Clippers. Miami right now about a 4-point favorite. And yeah, you didn't watch the end of Miami last night, did you? Nah, you saw they were up 17 in the second half. They're playing Golden State. No Ellis, no Biedrins. They're going to roll home. So you didn't stay up late. You should have, because it was fascinating to watch. Golden State rallies from that 17-point deficit, tie the game in regulation, win the game in overtime, and what did we see in the fourth quarter that we saw so much last year? Miami melting down offensively. 2-for-17 in the fourth quarter. One of the two makes a dunk by Udonis Haslem. So when they actually shot the ball, 1-for-16, and most interesting of all, those 16 shot attempts, none of them from a guy named LeBron James. The Heat really haven't solved many issues yet, have they?
Yeah, and especially when that's happening to a team like Golden State. Again, zero field goal attempts from LeBron in the fourth quarter. Reminds me of the NBA Finals when we saw LeBron completely taken out of his game. But this time, it's not against a champion. It's against a chumpion. I mean, Golden State is not, I'm thinking football. Golden State is not a playoff, they might be a playoff caliber team. They're not a playoff team. They weren't a playoff team last year. They haven't been a playoff team in recent years. Maybe Miami fell asleep. Maybe LeBron fell asleep. But the Clippers, they didn't fall asleep. They battled last night in Portland right through to the final minute when the Blazers were about to seal it away. We saw Chris Paul get a steal, take it down to the other end for a layup. Then Chauncey got an and-one. All of a sudden, it's a three-point game with less than 30 seconds remaining. And Portland's end game was fine. They hit all their free throws. The Clips had a turnover. A couple of turnovers, actually, on two consecutive possessions. Blazers win and cover, but some positive signs for the Clippers in that ballgame, most notably on the boards. We mentioned on yesterday's show that the L.A. Clippers had not won the rebounding battle in any game this year. Well, they won one yesterday against Portland, who'd been a top-notch rebounding team. And some of that had to do with Reggie Evans getting some playing time off the bench. He's been a non-factor so far this season, but he had seven boards in less than 17 minutes of action last night and could give the Clippers some much-needed low-post muscle. Blake Griffin, a phenomenal offensive player. His defense and rebounding still something of a work in progress. And this is a Clippers team that has allowed 51% shooting last night, only forced 11 turnovers. That's been their biggest weakness so far in 2012.
And we talked about the Clippers yesterday. We talked about the bottom line and rebounding and defense. When we chart the defenses today, number 25. That's the bottom tier. Rebounding, number 29, even after showing a little bit better with Evans. This is going to be their difficulty. How do they defend a team like Miami? Now, you like that idea of Paul and Billups in the backcourt together because there's that savvy leadership. Both guys can create or run the offense. One of them has to guard Dwayne Wade. We don't know who that's going to be. Caron Butler can actually get out and guard LeBron James a little bit. He can get physical with him. But the rest of this is just tough matchups all over the place. Griffin will struggle to guard Chris Bosh. So the Clippers defensively may be a bad matchup tonight. We kind of wanted to play this game over the total. The odds makers were a little bit too sharp with it early. We're seeing 203, 203 and a half. If there's any trickle back over the course of the day, maybe a little over for your pockets in this matchup. Both teams figure to attack aggressively.
Let's go to St. Louis. We'll take a look at the hardwoods in the college variety right now. Temple and St. Louis. We're seeing the Billikens minus 8. And, hey, Rick Majerus' team has had a phenomenal start to the season. I've made money with them. If you've been anyone who's made money with them, if you've been betting on a St. Louis so far this season, they have been consistent money makers in just about every role. But it's a market conundrum a little bit because this St. Louis Billikens team, we know how good they are. Dave knows how good they are. You know how good they are. The betting markets know how good they are. Yeah, they have Sweet 16 potential. This team is absolutely has the talent level and the level of execution and the level of experience to make a significant postseason run, but everybody sees that. You're not getting real bargains with St. Louis at this stage of the season.
So many times when conference play begins, we can talk about horses stepping up or down in class where you find some real line value. This series is going to be a real good example. We're going to bring two ways of approaching this. One, if you remember back in football season, we had what we call Senior Bowl in the postmortem segment, taking the last 4 years of programs head-to-head, the lifespan of the 50-year seniors, and looking at those results to see if there was something in the program versus program matchups that goes outside the realm of the way it's being priced. Boy, does this series do that. Now, it just so happens the last 4 years, that's the Rick Majerus versus Fran Dunphy arc. Take a look at these four meetings. Last year, Temple, 65-40. 2 years ago on this court, Temple, 57-51. 3 years ago, Temple, 57-53. You go back four, it's Temple, 54-53. You notice two things. Temple wins every game. Also, every game, slow, low tempo. So how does one team all of a sudden become an 8-point favorite when that's the history? Strength of schedule. Heading into conference play, sometimes you see big disparities. Here's where they are as of today, and we'll use the two good independent sources, Ken Pomeroy and Jeff Sagarin. St. Louis strength of schedule, 270 on the Sagarin ratings, 240 on the Pomeroy ratings. That's way down near the bottom. Temple, number 11 on the Sagarin ratings, number 8 on Pomeroy. That's one of the bigger schedule gaps we'll find for any teams from the same conference this time of the year. That's where this 8 has come from.
And, of course, the Temple Owls really have the veterans to be tough outs in these road environments. We've talked about Temple in this role. We like them as road dogs. Look, you have the seniors, Juan Fernandez, Ramon Moore. You have the juniors, Khalif Wyatt, Rollar Hollis Jefferson. They have the veteran leadership that serves them well in hostile environments like this one. St. Louis has been very good so far this year, very good to my pockets, very good to my clients' pockets, but not in this matchup, nuh-uh. But Dave, that's not where we're going to go for play of the day today, is it? We're going somewhere else.
We could take a little Temple along for the ride, but no, we'll go back to something we've touched upon on this show in both directions. We've been pointing out Portland as a play-on team from the start this year. Last Friday, we talked about a lot of the Orlando issues, using Chicago as a play of the day against the Magic. They got the wrong line here. Portland, a 3-point home favorite against Orlando. This is a 6 or 6.5 waiting to happen, which you'll see as the season progresses. Portland better numbers across the board than the Magic, despite facing a much tougher schedule. Orlando's only played 2 playoff teams so far, not competitive at Oklahoma City or against Chicago. Let's go back to the Rose Garden, our own little Garden of Eden so far this year. Play the Trailblazers, -3, as the Vegas Sports Day play of the day.
Well, this has been a little bit of a Garden of Eden, Dave, except for that you're no Eve, unfortunately. But
and you're Adam.
I'm not even going to go there. Forget the religious stuff. That's it. We're wrapping it up. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again tomorrow, and we'll see you at the Super Bowl party right here in Las Vegas.